This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Simpson.
All right, it is that all-important time once again. Oh, yeah, time for the Decibel Geek Podcast. It's your home for hard rock, classic metal, everything in between, right here. I'm your host, Aaron Camaro. There's your other host, Chris Sinzak.
What's happening?
How's it going, man?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good, yeah. Really good. I'm excited for today. We're going to get to see our old friend again.
Yeah, this
is
a long time coming. You know, it's been a lot has changed since the last time we had him on the show.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we know you guys love Toddzilla, and we obviously love Toddzilla, and so we haven't had a chance to sit down and talk to Todd in such a long time. We thought, hey, you know, isn't that what this is all about?
Yeah.
An excuse for us to hang out with our favorite rock and roll people. And Toddzilla, man, he's on the top of that list.
And there's some of you that are listening that have come on board since Todd was on the show last, and you may not have heard his previous appearances. Obviously, we would encourage you to go into the archives and check those out. But yeah, we also had him kind of recount basically his most classic story.
How can't we?
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's so good. But before we get to all that, of course, we got to take care of our business. And our business at hand, our reviews and recommendations. Man, we got all three this week. That's amazing.
Yep.
Let's kick it off with an iTunes review. It's entitled Best Music Podcast on the Planet.
Cool.
Comes to us from Hollywood Tees. I've been a longtime listener, and these guys know how to rock. Great content week in and week out, while keeping it fresh and fun. Chris and Aaron know their stuff. Longtime fans of Kiss, their Kiss shows are top-notch. You'll want to catch the Best Of shows and Albums Unleashed series as well. I give this one 2 horns up. Keep rocking, guys.
Awesome.
That's a great one.
Thank
5 stars,
much.
iTunes, Hollywood Tees, we love it. What is this? Holy moly. This is probably the longest review I've ever seen.
It has to be.
It's a Pod Chaser review. Man, here we go. Wow, look at this. Let me catch my breath. It's entitled Hard Rock and Heavy Metal Best Friends. For over 20 years I spent in the Marine Corps, I had 2 best friends that I would geek out with about our favorite type of music, hard rock and heavy metal. We would buy and swap music, talk about bands, and attend concerts together. In late 2015, we all three retired from the military within a couple of months of each other and ended up moving to different parts of the country. After that happened, I really started to miss my music camaraderie. When I started my new civilian job, a desk/computer job, I needed to find something to help pass the time during the day. Well, one of my favorite albums from the 80s and early 90s is Under the Influence from the band Wildside. In September of 2016, Wildside got back together for a one-off concert here in Golden, Colorado. It was awesome. A couple of days later, I went on the YouTube to see clips of the concert, and I saw that they were posted by Decibel Geek TV, Colorado's own Rock and Ron.
Yeah.
This piqued my curiosity, and I had to find out more about this Decibel Geek. So in October of 2016, I discovered the Decibel Geek podcast, and I've been addicted ever since. Chris and Aaron have become my new hard rock best friends. Over the past 2 years, I've binge-listened to over 330 episodes of the podcast, which makes being at work a hell of a lot more interesting. Since I discovered the Decibel Geek podcast, I have also started to listen to other music-related podcasts. However, none of them keep me as interested or entertained as Chris and Aaron. One big reason for that is that Chris and Aaron are no one-trick pony, and the variety of their shows is great. Different episodes range from Radio Sucks, Year in Review, Albums Unleashed, Fresh Blood, Artist Interviews, Top 5 Lists, Kissmas in July, and the ever-popular Unnamed Artist Specials. We're not done. Let me scroll a little further because this is freaking great. All right. It goes on a little something like this. After binge listening through the whole back catalog, I began to worry that I wouldn't get as much Chris and Aaron music banter. Well, luckily I was wrong. I made a donation to the Decibel Geeks and I became a Decibel Geek VIP. As a DBG VIP, I get access to a ton more material. I now get to listen to album verses, extra content from interviews, the laid-back vibe, normal life stuff of the Chris and Aaron show, and the all-new KISS podcast, Torpedo Dudes. If you are a fan of hard rock and heavy metal music and want to listen to two guys who could be your music geek best friends without any controversy or drama, you have to give the Decibel Geek podcast a listen. Best music podcast on planet rock. Keep rocking, brothers. Wow. That comes to us from Starsky.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Dun, 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 dun. Congratulations, confetti's yes. Falling down. Greatest review ever.
Yeah, and probably the longest.
I think so, man.
I love it.
Fantastic. I guess we can just end the show now, right?
Yeah, that's all we
can't
need.
Top that.
Hard to top that. We do have a Facebook recommendation.
Yes, we do. And it comes to us from our good friend, Rosita Mark. And this one, not quite so long. It goes like this. The show is great. The chemistry between Chris and Aaron is spot on. I listen on the way to work.
Works for me.
Works for me, too. Fantastic. Thank you guys for leaving those reviews and recommendations. You know, we love to read them on the show because it means something to us. You know, it makes us feel good about what we're doing. So keep them coming. And as long as you keep them coming, we'll keep reading them on the show.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Fantastic.
All right. So other favorite people, the Geeks of the Week. These are the people that shared on Facebook and retweeted it on Twitter. Last week's top five Ramones songs of 76 and 8 to 80.
That was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. And looking forward to doing part two and picking up in the 80s.
Me too. And I think I know a special guest we can have on with us for that.
I do too, because he let us know.
Yeah, he did.
All right. Geeks of the Week this week are Joe Royland, Sit and Spin with Joe, David Cathy, Kristen Schimbeck, Kevin Williams, James West, Simon Catt, Earl Thunders, Anthony Britt, Vinny Knight, Terrell Fernbach, Joseph Capone, Baco, Shane Hebert, Shane Paisley, Peter Vassallo, Ray Kuhn, David Cathy, Kenneth Roy, Aaron Baker, Rob Harris, Eric Sinzak, that's my brother, Greg Troyan, Joe Lascon, Andrew Jacobs, Brad Schick, Chuck Noseworthy, David Glenn, Mikhail Burrell, Kim Harden, Tunkel, Brant Cattell, Bill Elam, Jay Shabluski, Rob in the Hood, Ernesto Aguiar, Bipolar Billy, and as always,
the Mooger Fooger. Man, we had a lot of fun last week talking about the Ramones. And, you know, one thing we always recommend and kind of beg you guys more or less to get on the Facebook page and leave your comments.
Yeah.
And I saw Ralph Vieira left a really cool one about how the Ramones got their name. And we didn't really talk about that last week.
No.
But it's tied in with Paul McCartney. After Ralph brought it up, I had to look it up.
Oh, yeah, the Paul Ramone.
Yeah,
pseudonym.
Paul McCartney would sign into hotels as Paul Ramone.
Yeah.
And Dee Dee was such a big fan of Paul McCartney that he thought it was cool. I'll take the name. So he became Dee Dee Ramone. And then Joey's like, that's cool. And so they all became the Ramones.
That's good knowledge on Ralph's part.
Shoot, yeah, man. And you know what? The Rock and Metal Combat podcast. Yep. Is back.
Yeah, they put their first episode, almost an album, first episode out in quite a while, and I listened to it this morning. So, you know, they're both going through a whole lot of stuff. Ralph's really busy with work stuff, and Ian's working through some stuff, but it was great to hear them cutting up again, and I got several laughs in my cubicle as I listened this morning.
Nice, nice. I got to finish through it, but I started listening to it today, too.
Yeah, it was really good.
It's nice to have the Ear Peeler Podcast Kings back in action.
The unverified. Did you get that trophy made up yet?
No, not yet.
All right, we'll work on that.
So what else we got going on?
Well, there's some Rockin' Pod Expo news.
Yeah? You want to hold off on that till the middle break, or how do you want to do it?
Let's just do it now, and then
we'll knock it all out now,
and that
no
way
break.
We can have an unencumbered conversation with Todd Zilla, because it's worth it.
I like it. I like it. So yeah. I guess before we get to Rockin' Pod, we got to let everybody know if you're in the Nashville area, or you're going to be in the Nashville area this coming Saturday night.
March 30th, 2019, if you're listening to this 3 years from now.
I'm sure you saw our epic commercial.
Yeah, and another one just came out, too.
Yeah, and I saw it up to like 1,500 views.
Yeah, it got a lot of views.
For our awesome commercial where we interviewed Iron Eddie.
Yeah.
From Iron Maiden album cover fame.
It's pretty cool.
It was awesome. I asked all the right questions.
Yeah.
Didn't get any answers.
No, yeah. Toughest interview ever, for sure.
Oh, definitely. If you haven't seen it, get on YouTube and look at, or actually go to Iron Tribe's Facebook page is where it's at, and you can check that out. But what it is we're hosting a party, a Headbangers Ball party here in Nashville at the Little Harpeth Brewing Company, and great bands. They got Toxic Pistols are going to be there, and Iron Tribe, which is pretty much the most awesome Iron Maiden tribute you could ever freaking ask for.
Yeah, we sat in on their rehearsal last week, and jeez, I mean, that stuff is not easy to play, and they were just killing it.
No, man, it was pretty cool to sit in the room, and they're just playing for each other, trying to get it all right, you know, so they can be on the ball, you know, so they can up the irons on Saturday night as high as they can.
Yeah.
And man, just to be in the room, hanging out, watching them jam it out, it was freaking great.
Yeah,
I can't wait for the actual show.
Yeah, if you're an Iron Maiden or old school metal, you know, it's a can't miss if you're anywhere near Nashville.
So. Definitely. That's this Saturday night, so come check us out. We're going to be doing a little recording while we're down
there. Yeah, we definitely will. Yeah, it's going to be fun. We're going to be on stage. I'm a little nervous.
It's going to be great. Trust me.
I'm just going to let you do all the talking like you did with Eddie. Well, hopefully it goes better than that.
Can't go much worse.
I know. The crowd will just be completely silent no matter what
we'll
we
be asking them questions. They're just staring at us.
They'll just stare at us
like
Eddie.
Great.
All right. So Rockin' Pod News. This is a big one. And I haven't, as of this recording, I haven't publicly announced this yet. So Decibel Geek listeners, that's another benefit to listening to our show is you'll get some of these, you know, tidbits before I announce them publicly. Michael Sweet from Stryper is going to join us this year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Confirmed last week. And, you know, I'm incredibly excited to have him. He's going to be at the expo, you know, signing autographs, meeting people. And I think we're going to have a panel discussion with him on stage.
Right on.
And we're working out details on that. And there's
bring your Stryper albums.
Yeah. Bring them and get them signed on your Michael Sweet solo stuff. And, that leads me into another thing. The pre-party concert headliner has been confirmed.
Yes, that's where we talk on the Facebook page sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes you get the updates there. Sometimes you get them here. Who knows where they come from, but they're coming all the time.
So
Friday night, our good buddies, we needed somebody that could really bring the rock for that Friday night party. Something that a little bit of anybody could dig.
Mm-hmm.
And so you nailed it, man.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you got the right guys.
Yeah, the Rock and Roll Residency will be headlining that show. And, you know, if you're not familiar with them, if you've seen Gene Simmons solo or Ace Frehley solo in the past year, it's those guys.
Right. It's the Ace Frehley slash Gene Simmons band.
Yes.
And Friends.
And Friends. And the And Friends is a big thing because some of our expo guests we'll be getting up on stage with those guys and doing songs. So this is going to be a very unique concert. And, you know, think of who I've announced. There's a good shot that some of those guys are going to get up and do songs with the residency.
Nice.
So it's going to be really cool. And I've got opening bands to announce soon. I'm firming up a few details on that. But
hell yeah.
And I saw Mangus recently, and Mangus is most likely going to get up and do a song with them too.
So sweet.
I want to hear some Thin Lizzy. That's what
He can bust it out so good.
Yeah, but it's going to be, you know, more guests being worked on, have some more to confirm, got some vendors on board, got some sponsors we're working out. There's a lot of stuff in the works. That's why I sound so tired.
Nice.
But yeah, there's a lot of stuff going
earning
on.
It.
I am definitely earning it. So do the best to throw a party. But yeah, go to rockinpod.com and get all the details, buy your VIP tickets, get your regular tickets. If you're a podcaster, you want to become a podcaster. Go,
where are my podcasters at?
Yeah, go
come
and
on, everybody.
Register as a podcaster and get and you know secure your spot, and you'll get your table if you get a certain level and everything. And there's going to be like a podcast mixer the night of the pre-party concert, only for podcasters.
See, that's the thing, you know, the special guests. That's great.
It is
awesome bands. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
What's really really awesome is the podcasters.
Yeah.
The guys that come down, they set up their booths, they get to interview all these awesome people, they get to, you know, share with the guests, the people that are coming in to just check out the Rock and Pod. The people that are coming to see Michael Sweet.
Yeah.
They're going
to turn them on to your show.
They're going to walk past your table and you're going to be like, "Hey, we talk about Stryper."
Yep.
You
know? It's a great way to get new listeners to also network with other shows.
Yeah.
There's the amount of content that has come out of the first 2 years of this thing is crazy.
Yeah, you show up in August, you record for a day, and then you're set for till like September.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a great way to put names with faces and meet people in person. And it's, you know, yeah, if you're, and if you want to become a podcaster, if you listen to this show and you're like, man, I'd like to do that. I'd like to do what Chris and Aaron do. We're going to have an education track for registered podcasters. So basically, even if you're experienced or you're brand new to it, we're going to have speakers that are going to be there dishing out valuable information where you can learn how to make your podcast, how the best way to submit your shows to iTunes, the best way to build your social media following, ways to promote yourself on social media, the best way to increase your download numbers. I mean, like, it's really a bona fide podcasting trade show
now. Right.
So, yeah, I'm really excited to add that element this year. So, yeah, if you're listening to me right now and you're like, man, I'd love to do that, or you're like, I know I could do that, well, come and learn how to do
exactly.
it.
And then you go back, and then the next year you can be a guest. Yeah. You know, you can be one of our special podcast buddies.
We've done, we had a number of people that came to year one that came back year two as podcasters.
Yeah.
So,
pretty sweet.
Come and join us, hang out, you know, have a beer with us.
It's we love this podcasting, but we don't hog all the glory to ourselves. No. We want everybody to get involved in it.
Because radio sucks.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
It's the future.
Do it with us.
Exactly.
All right. But
so speaking of podcasting, man, you ready to get to this week's episode?
Yeah. Toddzilla's back. And this is a really cool conversation. It kind of goes all over the place. But like he's just a wealth of knowledge with his experience in guitar work and in the music industry. And that you get a good inside track on how Nashville has changed over the years, how Nashville still pulls together. And of course, the incredible David Lee Roth story that you have to stick around to hear at the end.
And the cool thing about Toddzilla is if you spend 2 minutes with him, you are automatically cooler for having done so. And we spent over an hour with him, so how are we?
Yeah, we love
him. And now we're going to transfer that coolness onto you when you listen to this.
Yeah, we know you're going to enjoy the stories you hear today.
Mm-hmm.
So Toddzilla returns.
Hey, Todd.
How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for coming to the Purple House of Funk.
I know.
It's back.
It's the sequel.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And new and improved. Definitely improved.
And you're going to be heard by a lot of new listeners because it's been a while since you've been on the show and we've picked up a lot of new people. So if you don't know, Toddzilla is really one of our most popular ever guests on the show. And we still get great feedback to this day about his appearances on the show. So we might have you repeat a couple of stories just because I want to catch a few people.
Okay.
But we didn't really come with a plan, but we just were friends with you. We wanted to come over and catch up.
Yeah.
And we think we know each other well enough. We can fill a portion of time and make it entertaining, I think.
We'll figure something out.
But for those that may not know, Todd has been a fixture of the local Nashville rock scene. When did you got here? What, mid-80s, right?
Yeah.
Mid-80s.
Yeah, yeah. I got here in 1985.
85. And he's been through a lot in the last year, 2 years?
10 years,
well,
really.
10 years, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're sitting in a house that was just rebuilt completely from the ground up that was lost in a fire. Well, thankfully, while you were out of town and you weren't in it.
Yeah, I was away on vacation, but it was that nightmare scenario where you're 2 o'clock in the morning, you get the phone call that your house is on fire, and I'm 9.5 hours away.
Yeah.
It was brutal.
Yeah,
you know, and the house was completely destroyed. Lost most of my gear except for my guitars. The easy way to say it is that the guitars, a lot of them were in cases, so the cases did their jobs, thankfully, and a lot of my guitars were saved, but you know, all the rest of my gear, my amplifiers and my recording gear and everything was just, it was killed,
right.
As were 7 of my 8 cats.
Yeah.
That was the most brutal part of it.
Yeah, that was the worst part.
And I lost a 1964 Corvette convertible. So, you know, that's, anyway, it was a real tough thing to go through. And then we had this unbelievable political battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, made in the news.
Raged on for 6 months with the Nashville Metro Zoning Historic Commission.
Yeah.
The whole house, it was gutted, but they were trying to say that I had to preserve part of the facade. And in order to rehabilitate what was left, it was going to cost, you know, a small fortune that I didn't have, that the insurance certainly didn't give me. They gave me enough money to rebuild my house, but they didn't give me enough money to do what the historical commission wanted. And it kind of reeks of, I think there was something more dastardly at work. I think somebody wanted my property, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it was very, and they just kept stonewalling me and finding all these ways to, every time we would do what they asked, they would move the ball. Yeah. And it just reached a point where it was like, well, I can no longer do what you ask. I can't afford to do it. And their immediate reaction was tough.
Yeah.
Tough shit. And it went on for like 6 months. And then an unbelievable show of support from the Nashville community, mostly the music community, but the community at large. And we got a petition signed by 10,000 people in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And when we finally made it to the hearing, the zoning commission kind of knew that it was going to be torches and pitchforks if they turned me down. So yeah.
I had my torch and pitchfork ready.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, well, and I'm so grateful because a lot of people did. And that was the only thing that saved my house. You know, the bully blinked. We had to go through this entire crazy rigmarole to get there. But once we got past it, we were able to take down the house and rebuild it the way it was intended to be from the start, you know. And
that hearing was a crazy, crazy day.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster. Yeah, I mean, it really was.
It seemed it would go one way, and then it was going to go the other way. And it was like, wait a minute, did he get his house back or not?
Right. I mean, it swayed back and forth, and it was like something on some crime drama
it
on
really
TV.
Was.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. And you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, you don't want to think that those things really do happen, but corruption's everywhere. Yeah. And somebody had designs on, I've got a real valuable piece of property here in East Nashville. Mm-hmm. I live on a corner lot that you could probably stick two or three tall skinnies on if things were maneuvered right. And I believe what they were really trying to do was they were going to stonewall me knowing that I would fight, saying, oh, you can't tear it down. You can't tear it down. You can't tear it down. Then when I finally ran out of money, gas, breath, whatever, and, you know, walked away, then they were going to swoop in and take it. And then they were going to say, oh, well, it's sat for too long. Now we have to tear it down. And then two tall skinnies were going to pop up on my property.
Yeah.
You know, it was all maneuvered.
And even when you won, they made it look like they were like, okay, it's like, basically they tried to make it still look like you lost, but they gave you what you wanted. Like,
well, what they did was they got themselves off the hook.
Yeah.
Okay. Because certain people are corrupt, and I'm not saying the entire commission is corrupt because I don't think it is. But there's the commission, and then there's the staff, and the staff is the people that compile the reports, and they send the reports to the commissioners, and then the commissioners work through the legal part of it and vote on what's based on the legal side of it. Well, I think it was somebody on the staff that was really the corrupt person. Mm-hmm. And the commissioners, they kind of had to cover for this. And they knew that it was going to be torches and pitchforks if they didn't give me what I wanted, but they didn't want to set a precedent. Mm-hmm. So kind of engineered it in such a way where they got themselves off the hook.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you have seven commissioners. Well, one of them strangely showed up late and she wasn't allowed to speak or vote.
Yeah, I remember that.
So now you're down to six. And then when the deliberation started, the chairman just got up and walked out. Mm-hmm. So that left five. And then they voted and it was 3-2 in my favor. Yep. But you have to have four votes to pass.
Right.
So then the lawyer stood up and said, well, you have three choices. You can ask Mr. Austin to defer for another month, which everybody knew I wasn't going to do. Mm-hmm. Or you can vote again in hopes that somebody will change their vote, and that wasn't going to happen. Right. Or you can leave it dead on the table and as an inaction by the commission. And if
that was
if no action is taken within 30 days, then Mr. Austin gets his approval. But Mr. Austin has already applied more than 30 days ago, so approval
wins.
Is automatic. Yeah. So the co-chairman looked at me and she said, do you understand what happened to you? And I said, why don't you tell me? And she said, you get your permits Monday. And I said, okay. And I stood up and walked out.
Yeah. It was a nerve-wracking
day. It just got them off the hook. I'll go to my grave believing that that entire thing was actually engineered.
Yeah.
It seemed
it was too
big a deal as it was because the news had been covering it.
Yeah.
They knew it was a big deal.
Here's how we do this. You don't show up on time. You get up and walk out halfway through. That leaves it like this. Then it becomes that.
Yeah.
We didn't do nothing wrong. He can just just we'll just move on from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and it never happened. Right. You know, yeah. And
Fox News was even in the room.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean Dennis Farrier, he was the guy that's the expose guy. He comes in and sets down a camera, and those commissioners were like deer in the headlights. Yeah. They were like, I was thinking shit, that, they just got be real. Yeah, I mean they did get nervous, and there was, you know, there was like 100 people there with purple armbands.
There was a lot of us
you
there.
Know, my house is purple, and everybody was wearing these purple armbands. You know, and it was just an amazing so show of support. So I'm very grateful. I could I could live for 1,000 years and not express enough gratitude to the city of Nashville, the people of Nashville, for standing up behind me the way they did.
It was it was kind of a reminder of the way Nashville was in the back in the day, because it was like everybody would rally around. Like the music community still is a pretty tight bonded community.
Yeah. Well, and the thing that I would say about Nashville is, you know, you can there, you can just like any place and just like any situation, you can knock it all you want. But the truth is Nashville has a really big heart.
It does. Yeah.
You know, people got behind me. There was an amazing GoFundMe put up in my name right after the fire that I still can't believe that it raised as much money as it did. I was just, I was shocked. And, you know, and again, it's just a testament to the people who, you know, care, you know, and Nashville has a tendency to rally around people when the chips are down. And like when the flood happened or when the tornado happened, you know, all these things that have happened in Nashville's history, you see this real amazing groundswell of people helping each other. And it's, you know, you can say a lot about the music biz and all those things, but Nashville's really got a big heart.
Yeah. Yeah. We're lucky to be here. But if so, but on the good news, you're back in full action. You're doing, you're doing a new, new project now.
Yeah, I am. It's called Toddzilla's Rip Roaring Rock and Roll Big Top. And it's a, it's the easy way to describe it is it's kind of a rock and roll circus.
Yeah.
Great band playing 70s and 80s covers that everybody loves, songs that you haven't heard in a long time, things that are really cool tracks. And, it's just, you know, rock and funk and all the stuff that I'm good at, you know, that I've done for years. And, you know, it goes from Van Halen to Prince to Joe Walsh to Boston to, you know, and I've got an amazing band, amazing group of guys that can just, they can do anything that I throw at them.
Yeah.
And they're just
having the band with you.
Well, a couple of familiar faces for people that know me from Jones World. The guy we call Yoda, Lawrence Bailey, that's was my ace sax man from Jones World. Well, he's playing guitar and sax in this. He's playing second guitar on it. And Fedora, who sang for Jones World, that he did backups and sang some leads. He's doing same thing here. He's singing backups and then takes some leads from time to time.
Awesome.
Then I have this amazing guy named Joey Hodge playing keyboards. That he's just phenomenal. I mean, that, you know, that that intro to the Boston song Foreplay Long Time.
Yeah.
He nails that to the wall.
That's
awesome. I mean, it's just goosebumps. You know, the guy is just, he's unbelievable. Anything I ask him to do, he comes in, he has it all nailed to the floor. He's got the sounds, he's got everything, and he can play his butt off.
That's awesome.
Ben Bruno and Matt Arsenault are playing drums and bass. They're from they played with Blair Brightrider.
Yeah, I remember.
In
what was that?
Absinthe Junk.
Yeah, Absinthe Junk.
Oh, yeah, they played in Absinthe Junk. They were the rhythm section in Absinthe Junk. And fabulous musicians. And so, again, they, anything I ask them to do, they can do it. And Derek Wolford is playing percussion. So, and he's got some sample pads and triggers and some of the things, you know, like we did Robert Palmer, Simply Irresistible, and he's got that sword sound, you know. And it's just, it's really cool to have some of the stuff, you know, that you've heard a million times, and to be able to do it and actually have it be accurate. Yeah. And we're really just exploring a lot of things, that a lot of songs that I never thought I would do.
Oh, really?
And you know, it's challenging to try to sing some of these things and do some of these things and step out front. You know, I mean, I've been doing the front man thing with Jones World and with Funkhammer for a while, but this is, you know, I mean, when you're asking yourself to, you know, sing a Sting song or something, you know, and try to really do it, you know, you really gotta hit the gas pedal and lean into it a little bit. So it's challenging and it's fun and everybody's having fun. But the other side of the thing is that we have these amazing circus performers like girls that are aerialists and jugglers and people that do like fire acts and just crazy stuff. You know, I got one girl that's got a big python. She hasn't brought the snake to the show yet, mostly because my sound man told me if the snake walked in, he was walking out. He's not about snakes, but she's got,
and I don't think a snake can make sounds.
She's got this big snake thing that she does. Of course, my girlfriend Abby, you know, everybody knows her. She's one of the fixtures in Nashville burlesque here in town. And she has her own show that she produces called Bordello Underground. Well, she's involved in it. So we got a little bit of the burlesque thing happening, some of the circus stuff, girls hanging from the ceiling, doing the aerial stuff. I even got these two girls that the girl that does the snake and one other girl, they do like a bed of nails act where they come out with these bed of nails sheets and they'll like lay down on them. And then one girl will lay on one and the other girl will pick the other one up and she'll like put it down on top of her and make like a sandwich and then stand on her. It's just the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen. Meanwhile, I'm over there doing, you know, playing some Van Halen song or something.
It's like Todzilla's Believe It or Not.
We just wanted to do something that was just, you know, a little off the hook, you know.
I mean, I love thinking outside the box. Like yeah. Bring a little something extra.
And as usual, you know, not only do I think outside the box, but it also paints me into a corner because there's only so many places I can do that kind of thing.
Right.
Because the girl's got to get that rigging up in the ceiling and stuff, so.
And it's been at Exit Inn each time, right?
We have done it at Exit Inn, yeah. And we're going to do one this Friday, the 22nd of March. Cool. We're going to be doing that show there, and it's, you know, it's just a lot of fun. We keep adding songs, and mostly because the band is so good, I just keep looking and going, hey man, we could do that, we could do this, we could do that, and I just keep throwing stuff at them to see what they, you know, if they trip, and they don't.
Wow.
You know, they're just, everything I'm asking them, you know, they're killing it. It's a lot of fun to be the hood ornament for that thing, and you know, just like I gotta play, you know.
Yeah.
And when my house burned and I had to kind of put everything on hiatus for a long time, and you know, sadly, you know, Funkhammer may not recover. Phillip's out playing with Jasmine Kane. He's playing drums for her and out on the road so much, and it's just kind of, you know, at this point it may or may not get back to a point where we can do anything, which makes me sad because I really loved the songs that we wrote.
Yeah, me too.
And I think that we really made a good record, and it was a really great band. But, you know, I mean, life goes on. My life got in the way, and, you know, they had to take other opportunities and do other things, and I can't fault them for it.
Right.
You know, Jones World's always there, but it's just kind of one of those things that's here again, there again, you know,
when
everybody has time and we get around to having a good reason to do it, we'll do it, you know.
On a stage that'll hold 20 people.
Exactly. You know, and here I am again with
another thing giant that has cast of about
20 people. Yeah.
Godzilla and a cast of thousands.
Yeah. It just kind of seems like that's my thing. I don't understand why, but it's you know, it's fun to play the songs that we're doing in the Big Top. You know, it's, again, the challenge is to find interesting things to do that will make people smile, you know, and make them go, oh, that's really cool. I hadn't heard that in years.
Well, I just like it. You've always, you know, made sure you integrated a visual with your stage show, because there's so many bands out there that's just like, they look like they just got off work and they picked up guitars. It's like, well, nothing exciting about that.
It's just simple. 12 years old, my first concert was Kiss. They ruined me.
It's like, you have to live up to that.
You know, for the rest of my life, you know, I mean, I've been trying to get there ever since, you know. It's just, to me, those performing is more than just standing up there and playing really well.
Right.
That's obviously the most important part.
Right.
But, and Nashville, you know, well, we're talking about Nashville. Nashville has never really been about show bands very much. Nashville's always been about the musicianship.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to see these bands that people are just like gaga over. And a lot of the, what I would consider to be, you know, like for example, the hip happening bands that everybody goes to see, you know, places like Third and Lindsley and stuff. That's the Nashville kind of stuff.
Right.
And they're all phenomenal musicians, but that's it, you know? And it's kind of one of those things that, to me, I always felt like performance was one of the reasons why I was up there too. And you know, same thing. I would never get on stage wearing jeans and a t-shirt. I just, you know, and more power to anybody that does. Hey, 99% of people are. So obviously right. that's what they want. But just that's I just feel like people should, if they're paying you money to come see you play, you should give them something for their entertainment dollar, you know, and you should give them bang for their buck. And I just feel like it's so much fun when there's this visual thing going on along with great music. It's sure. just, it's entertaining. And our, you know, the music of the last 20 years has just really gotten to a point where it kind of got into the shoegazing thing, and we never got away from that. And I'm still blown away by the fact that there's so very now, you know, some of the pop stuff like Bruno Mars and Pink and people like that are still right. doing amazing shows. But a lot of the rock bands just gave that up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I blame Spinal Tap.
Because they made a joke out of it.
Yeah, they made a joke out of it, and it sort of never recovered. You know, yeah. I've always wondered if that might have been part of it, you know. But sure, but it's just, you know, the big – I mean, and when you get into – you know, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day, and they were talking about, you know, I think somebody was talking about David Lee Roth, okay? Mm-hmm. And Dave's Dave, and I love Dave. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one of my big heroes when I was growing up. But let's face it, now Dave doesn't know who he is anymore. Mm. And that's why he looks like a game show host when he's up on stage, because he doesn't know what to do with himself. Right. Because his shtick is considered to be passé, so he can't do that anymore. And he's a little too old to do right. what he did. But 60-something but the truth is, you know, it's almost like he's out of his element. Every time I see the new incarnation of Van Halen, yeah. it's painful to me, because Dave just it hurts. It just looks it's uncomfortable to me, because he just doesn't look like he knows what to, he's like somebody who doesn't know what to do with their hands, you know, and he's doing this kind of thing, and he can't really, you know, he's probably too old to do the karate and all the shtick. He does quite still, a bit of it.
Yeah, but, himself in the face enough but, times. Yeah. He yeah. said, that's enough.
Yeah. No more. But I mean, it's not as athletic as it used to be in there. And that's because he's, you know, he's up there in years, but that's only a tip of the iceberg of what I'm talking about. I'm also talking about that. I feel like a lot of the bands from that era, they, you know, once the grunge thing hit and it became less and less and less about what you wore and more about, you know, what you were playing. And it was almost this, the fashion statement became anti-fashion statement.
Pretty much.
Exactly.
And yeah. all of the bands that were kind of strapped to high fashion were shown the door.
Yeah. And what do we do now?
and they don't know what to do. I mean, we were watching, Abby and I were watching a clip of what's her name? Lorraine Lewis that was from Femme Fatale.
She's with Vixen now
she's taken over the Vixen oh, wow. spot. And you know, she had her band Femme Fatale. It's all girls and women. I'll say that. Let me be polite.
She was the only girl.
But no, she wasn't originally. Oh, but okay. Her band over the last several years
has become
all women. And matter of fact, Tommy Lee's sister played drums with her on some stuff. Athena.
Oh, okay.
And she had this really great band of women that were women rockers, and they could play their butts off and all this stuff. And we were watching them on like a boat or something, yeah. and. The Abby made this comment. She was like, well, they're playing this, you know, that 80s hair rock, but the clothes that they're wearing and everything, it doesn't even really match the music, because it just looks, they're real dressed down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I had to explain to Abby, I was like, well, because all the people that did that, and of course I fall into that category, mm-hmm. all the people that did that stuff kind of, you know, they were sort of made fun of
right.
after a certain point in time, and it became a thing where
it's
it was like
a stigma. Yeah.
It became a stigma, and yeah. so those people, where they probably would like to be wearing the kind of shit yeah. that they wore back then, they know they better not.
Right.
So they got to find something else. So it all ends up being kind of this homogenized
yeah.
version of the rocker thing, and
right,
you know.
Because then at that point,
and everybody's wearing black. Boy, I'm gonna tell you
it's
that.
Gotta be black.
And there yeah. is no color on any rock stage anymore except for black.
Yeah.
Because I remember like when The Darkness came out, and then it was like, wow, these guys are kind of cool. is it a joke? Are they making fun of it?
Yeah.
You know, people wondered that.
They were fighting uphill.
Yeah.
And it, and there was kind of that element of tongue in cheek, and they kind of had to play it that way.
Yeah.
They sort of had to play it that way. I bet you they didn't really feel that way. They didn't feel like it was a joke. They weren't trying to make. They weren't trying to be satire. Now, the Steel Panther guys, obviously, that's
total satire.
That's a, and it's intended.
And at that time, those were the only two bands that were really stepping out doing that. And the one was a joke, so then everybody else assumed the other one was too. But they were just doing what they felt cool. You know?
Right.
But the Darkness are an amazing band.
They are. It's one of Abby's favorite bands.
I love them.
She's got like four or five routines to Darkness songs.
Oh, really?
That's awesome. It's good stuff.
Yeah, they were just so over the top. Everybody's like, is this for real or is this bullshit?
And that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, you got it. Cool. Like, for example, you know, you go see the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, which I loved it. You know, there's a lot of people giving it a lot of flack. And yeah, it was a little fluffy, but it was Hollywood. Yeah. What do you expect? Yeah. But the thing is, you know, if a band like Queen came out doing that kind of thing, they'd be torn to shreds, you know, because people would not take them seriously. Mm. And it's a shame because to me, theatrics are as much a fun of, that's a fun part of it as, you know, the music itself. You know, it's, I don't know.
I like rock stars to look bigger than life. Like, why do they have to look like the guy that works in the grocery store?
It sure is fun when they do.
Yeah.
You know, it sure is fun when they do.
A magic.
Years ago, I was never a real big Pearl Jam fan, but years ago when I was playing with Warner Hodges and the Disciples of Loud, the guy that played guitar in Pearl Jam, Mike McCready, he was a big Scorchers fan. And so they were coming to town. They were actually playing at Starwood. Mm-hmm. And his management got in touch with Warner and said he would love for you to come to the show and hang out. And so Warner said, why don't you go with me? So we went. And actually the guy that was his tech at the time was a guy named his nickname was Hippie Jeff. Well, Hippie Jeff's first – he had the Pearl Jam gig, and now he still works for Heart now. He doesn't work for Pearl Jam anymore. But he had the Pearl Jam gig for 15 years, and he's worked for Heart forever, worked for Nancy forever. And but his first gig was for the Scorchers. Oh, wow. He became a tech for Warner. So Jeff was going to be there. And so it was reunion time for Jeff and Warner. So we went and we're backstage and we're hanging out, and Mike comes over and he's real nice, and they hang out and they chat and everything. And we're in guitar land where the guitar boat is. And he's got all these amazing, you know, instruments that he's carrying around and playing with. And then it came time for the show. And, you know, there's this big old Starwood stage that we all remember.
Yeah.
And Pearl Jam sitting within like 5 feet of each other in the middle of it, like they're doing a bar band show.
Yeah.
And I was just stood in the wings going, you got to be kidding me. That's it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the biggest bands of the 90s, and they're playing it so down low. It's like they don't want to be associated with anything that goes too far.
Mm.
But I'm like, fuck, you're Pearl Jam, you know? I mean, come on.
You got all this room to run around.
You got
and
it.
Do
you
something.
Got it. And you got the resources. You got the resources to do anything that you want to do.
Yeah.
And but that's what you come up with. And I'm not, there's a lot of people that like that. So I'm not going to knock it, but it just didn't, to me, it just seemed like a huge letdown.
Yeah.
You know, and I've struggled that for a long time. So I keep putting on big shows. You know, the guy at Exit Inn told me, he said, man, we love it when you come in here and do this, because nobody does this anymore.
Yeah.
They all just come in and drop their rigs and play.
Yeah.
And I come in with a drum riser and geysers and, you know, a gigantic circus tent up in the ceiling, you know, with lights on the damn thing, you know, because I don't know when to quit.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end, people can say whatever they want, but, you know, I've been wearing them damn suits for 20 years
now.
Yeah. So I'm not going to change, you know.
Yeah.
I think if I came out wearing jeans and a T-shirt on stage, I think people would crap.
Right. You know? Yeah.
Everybody would think, what's wrong with him?
Why is Todd wearing a costume?
Is Todd exactly. You know, it's just become a thing.
Well, I saw you at the what show was it we saw at the High Watt? I don't remember who was playing. It was Defense Wins Championships.
And Tony Higbee's band.
And East Side Gamblers. And I saw in Todd's course dressed like Todd.
Yeah.
And I was like, you really got to start dressing up for these shows, Todd.
I think my shoes were like glitter or something.
They were.
I walked in, and even though it was
all
dark,
the heads start spinning towards
even though it was dark, I was still shining. So, you know, that's kind of, and it, you know, I mean, that's kind of, it's kind of my thing.
I love
whatever,
it.
You know.
My favorite
Somebody
thing was
gotta do it.
At the Rocket Pot Expo, this girl walks up to me, and I got my silver jacket on. She's like, "You are the shiniest person here." I point at Todd. She looks at him, looks back at me, goes, "Never mind."
That's awesome.
So you're first runner up.
First runner up.
Well, you're a point right there.
Well, you know.
You got to talk.
Maybe I'm rubbing off on you a little bit.
Right.
How about that? Well, I just, you know, it's just to me, I don't even know why. And it's like the hair thing. Everybody wants to talk about the hair.
Yeah.
But the truth is, you know, I wanted to be, you know, something unique. All the people that I grew up idolizing were people who tried to do their own thing.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's, you know, of course I work in a guitar store and I'm at Corner Music. And I, one of the things that's interesting to me is how over the last few years, I mean, I've been doing that gig for over 20 years, and you know, in the 80s and when the rock and roll thing was happening for all of us, you know, the stuff that we loved, you know, guys were building their own guitars, and it all came from Eddie Van Halen, but people were trying to be unique. They were doing their own paint jobs on their guitars, and they were doing, you know, trying to have unique clothing and a unique show. And so you had bands like Motley Crue pop up, and you know, they look like something from Mad Max, you know, when they first started.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, you had people trying to be unique. And even in like the pop side of things, you know, I mean, you go back and you look at the pop stars of the 80s, like around the MTV, and they were all pushing the envelope. David Bowie, you know, Boy George, you know, even Sting, you know, he had that jacket with all that fringe on it and stuff, you know. Yeah. I mean, it just, people were purposefully making the effort to be different and unique. And I never lost that bug.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story. One time when we were playing The Outer Limit way back in the day.
Place.
Okay. And the band that I was with then was The Jones. It was before it turned into Jones World. Yeah. And there was only four of us. And I was still wearing the suits, though. That's when we just started doing that shtick. And one day I thought, I don't know why I did, but out of nowhere I decided, you know what? I think I'm gonna shave my beard down a little bit. You know, I got the little scruffy beard, and I said, I think I'm gonna shave it down to like a goatee thing, and then I'm gonna have these sharp sideburns that come down the sides, you know. Mm-hmm. And that night, I went out. We weren't playing, but I went out to the Outer Limit, and I was just hanging out. And I'm walking around in the suit, and I look around, and every single guy has a goatee. And I was about to shit myself. I was like, I gotta get out of here. And I literally left and went home and grew it back as soon as I possibly could. I didn't go out for like a week because it bothered me.
Must not conform.
It really bothered me. And I don't know. I'm twisted that way. I have a sickness apparently because I just can't be like everybody else.
And I think I relate to that a little bit.
It's just, you know, and it's I don't know where that got lost. You know, our society has just reached a point where it's kind of like so common denominator oriented, and everybody wants the same clothes and everybody's the same thing. Where I was going, I got off track. But working in the guitar store, the last few years, everybody wants the same guitars through the same pedals through the same amp. Mm-hmm. Everybody's playing a Strat through a Tube Screamer through a Deluxe Reverb. Mm-hmm. And it makes my job kind of boring because I want to be like, look at this crazy guitar with all this shit on it, you know, and it's pointy and stuff. You know? But people are just, especially Nashville, it's very, they got blinders on. They're really traditional minded. So if it ain't a Stratatelli or a Les Paul, I can't really sell it right now. Yeah. And it's kind of, there's something inside of me that makes me go, well, that's not the way you're supposed to do it, you know. Hey, but more power to anybody that does.
Sure.
You know, I'm not taking anything away from anybody, but I just look at it and I just go, why do I want to be like everybody else? Why do I want my music to be like everybody else?
Yeah.
You know?
But then everything becomes cookie cutter that way.
Yeah. It does, and it has. And I think that the music business has suffered for it in a huge way. I think, you know, all this artists that we loved and listened to, I mean, whether it's Led Zeppelin or Kiss or Prince or, you know, I mean, Bruce Springsteen or whoever, all these icons that they have one common denominator. Every one of them is unique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they have something about them that makes them that at least initially in their career, it set them apart completely, whether it was the music they played or the clothes they wore or whatever, you know. Right. I think it's kind of that thing where it's kind of lost art, and everything in general has kind of suffered as a result. Yeah. You know, I want to see something that piques my interest and makes me go, wow, I haven't seen that before.
Right.
I haven't seen somebody do that, you know, or maybe I've seen them do it, but I hadn't seen them do it that way. You know, there's a different slant, and I just feel like, I feel like we've kind of lost that in some ways in popular music. You know, every record sounds the same. They all sound real compressed. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at records that are made these days, if you know anything about audio and recording, if you look at the WAV file,
It's all
it's just a block. Because it's all compressed and it's just like a wall.
Yep.
And I remember talking to Michael Wagner, and he was like, I tell people, if you – sorry, I'm doing a bad impression, but anyway.
I thought he was in the room.
I tell people, if you want that compressed sound, fucking call somebody else.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
That's actually a good impression.
I'm not going to fucking do it. You know,
I think I've heard him say the same
thing. Yeah, he just won't do it. Yeah. And it's that thing, you know. It's just – why do I want to sound like everybody else? I'll put this plug-in on my mix and make it sound just like everybody else. When we did the Funk Hammer record, I had a mastering engineer that's a real good friend of mine do the mastering for me. Mm-hmm. And he gave me two options. He said, okay, I'm going to give you two options, and I'm going to give you the one that's the way you want it, and I'm going to give you the one that's the way everybody else is going to want it if you want to shop it, you know, and the record labels are going to want to hear it this way. And it sounded awful to me. It was just, there was no dynamics whatsoever.
Yeah. Just a bunch of noise.
And I just, you know, I just rather, you know, y'all can call me a dinosaur. Oh, look at him, his hair. Oh, his suits, his good. Oh, man, he's wearing purple. Why isn't he wearing black? and your songs, your music sounds like the 70s or something, man. It's just, it's all bottom indie and blood. Yeah. That's what I want. You know,
that's the point.
Exactly. It's just the point. I it's interesting to me that things have gotten that way.
Well, let me ask you your take on Greta Van Fleet.
They're a real good copy band.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my personal opinion, you know, I mean, the songs are okay. Mm. I don't hate them because at least somebody's out there doing it, but I would like them better if they just were like, you know, when people approached Kingdom Come and said, you know, Kingdom Come just went, yeah, that's what we're fucking doing, you know, that's what we're trying to do. I think I would like them better if they just came out and said, well, yeah, we're doing, yeah, of course we are, you know, but, you know, Led Zeppelin's old and they're not making records anymore. This is the stuff we like, so we're doing it. Yeah. The fact that they claim that they're not, that's what makes me go, you know what, my bullshit meter goes off off then. Yeah. That's the difference.
Yeah.
I don't dislike what they're doing. No. I just wish they'd own up to it.
Yeah, me too.
And then I would probably have better.
I think
better.
They have recently.
Respect it then, yeah.
They've started to kind of admit to it.
Dude, how can you not?
Well, it's obvious.
I mean, come on. You know?
I mean, they sound just like Kingdom Come.
Yeah, exactly.
They should get sued by Kingdom Come.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I had I made a joke because there was an interview with Robert Plant a year or so ago where he was like, there's this band, Greta Van Fleet. I hate them. And I put a post on like,
well,
I was like, it really sucks when bands rip off other people, doesn't it?
Well,
because Zeppelin was, were masters at thieving.
Sure, sure. But
Willie Dixon had a few words for them, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. But they also, you know, they found a way to still sound like themselves.
That's
doing
true, right?
It. They were ripping off. Musically, they were ripping off some stuff, you know, and songs and those kinds of things. But it still sounded like those guys doing it their own.
Yeah, right.
These guys just sound like, you know, if I was Bob, I'd be mad too. Yeah. I mean, how can you not be? You know, he could, you know, he's got a lot of wrecked bitch. You know, I mean, you know,
Again, Zeppelin too, when they were doing it, it was unique. You know, yeah. Nobody else was like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
I don't know. I just wanted your take on that because I'm always interested in people's opinions.
Yeah, like I said, they're very polarizing. I'm not one of those guys who's going to. I'm not going to get into that too much, just because. More power to him. At least somebody's playing music with guitars.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so you have to say that. It's just, like I said, just own up to it, and I'd feel better about it.
Well, somebody works on the inside of the guitar business. I mean, do you feel like there's a death of the guitar going on?
Oh, there has been for a long time.
Yeah.
It's been struggling. I don't think I'm going to use the word death.
Okay.
Because that's a little preposterous. Right. It's like when Gene Simmons said rock and roll is dead. Well, I understand where he was going to a certain point, but at the same time, you can't really say that. Mm. The guitar business has been struggling. And the main reason has been because young people are not gravitating towards playing guitar the way that they used to. Yeah. We have a lot less younger people. The demographic has gotten older. Mm. Those guys already have guitars, so they're not buying anything. And so it's where the guitar business has been struggling for several years.
Yeah.
It basically boils down to this. There's just not that many people out there making music that the kids are interested in.
Right. Yeah, there's no heroes.
There's no guitar heroes. Sure, yeah. You know, you look at the guitar magazines.
Yeah, I'm amazed they're still even out.
Well, and the thing is, you look at them, and every month it's the same guys. It's Hendrix and Van Halen and Joe Satriani and Eric Clapton, and they regurgitate these guys, and it's just Santana makes an appearance every so often. You know, but you have these – but they just don't have very few guys that they can go to, you know. And
right, you could take a hot young guitar player and slap him on the cover of Guitar Player magazine and put it out on the shelves – but you're not going to sell as many as when you put Hendrix on the cover, because most people are going to go, well, who's that?
Correct.
I don't know. Whatever.
As far as guitars are concerned right now, you know, like, let's say signature model guitars. There's only like one or two guys that can sell guitars right now. Mm. You know, John Mayer is one of them.
Really?
Well, he's one of the only guys that's identified as a guitar player.
Yeah.
Okay. Bonamassa would be, but Bonamassa likes all old vintage guitars, so everybody knows that, so they don't, you know.
Yeah, why would they want to buy something new for
his name on it? Because he won't buy it. He's out buying 59 Les Pauls, you know.
I saw a video of him this week playing Headless Steinberger guitars.
Yeah, he's all into, he's an interesting now. Character. He comes in the store every so often, and he's a quirky dude.
Is he?
And he's always looking around for things, and he gets into things and kind of goes on tangents for a while. And he'll do that just as kind of, oh, check this out, this is cool, and then eventually he's going to go back to his left.
He posted a picture of like six of them, and he's like, something like my new hobby or something.
I mean, he he's the cool thing about that guy is, I'll give him this, he is and always has been, from the time he was a little kid and he started showing up with Danny Gatton and all that stuff. He is just a little guitar freak from the first day. He was just this kid that grew up and loves guitars, and he is just enamored with it. The guy has spent more money on vintage guitars than probably anybody has in 25 years. That guy's just got a collection that's staggering. I don't even know how he has any money, because he just keeps buying these unbelievable old vintage guitars. Yeah. But that's what's his thing. It's what he's into. And so, you know, when you have a guy out there, you know, you kind of go, okay, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But there's just not really that many guys there's certainly not anybody breaking any ground that's turning kids on to playing guitars. You know, there's not any guitar heroes. It became a thing in the past.
Yeah.
The grunge thing kind of killed it. Mm-hmm. It sort of made it a joke, and it's never really recovered. And now you've got fringe people. Mm-hmm. You know, I see kids that come in and they're, you know, pulling the little Van Halen guitar off the wall and doing, you know, Eddie licks and stuff. And it's like, oh, well, that's cool. You know, there's hope for the world yet, so to speak.
Right.
But they're fewer and farther between, because it's the demographic has changed. Kids now are into video games and computers.
Yeah.
And they don't want to. And let's face it, playing guitar takes a lot of your life.
It does.
Yeah. And people's attention span is so short now that kids don't want to sit in a basement like this one in woodshed for like, you know, 5 years before they're able to really play worth a damn.
Yeah.
You know, it's work. It's hard work. I've played guitar for over 40 years of my life, you know, and it's just one of those things that it's not an instant gratification kind of situation. And I think that has made it difficult because our society has really become very instant gratification oriented. Yeah. iPhones, iPads, right. Internet, everything is at your fingertips. You can see it. Now, the shitty thing is they've all got YouTube, which they have a resource that we did not have.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
You can pull up a video and watch Jimmy Page do his thing
and
from 1975 or whatever, and it's right there. They have this amazing resource, but then again, what you end up with there is you end up with all these little guitar zombies that just sit and like can play everything note for note, but there's no emotion and no, they're just regurgitating.
There's
things.
Some of these videos online of these kids that are like freaking 7 years old and they're just doing Yngwie level shit, and it just blows my mind.
But
they're not coming up with any of that on their own.
But put them in a room, in a room, and ask them to play with a band and improvise something, and they can't.
They'll have no
because
clue.
they have no. Yeah. That's one skill that they're not learning that way. They can sit and doodle Yngwie licks all day long and just sit and practice. But the other thing is, there's not as much getting in a room and, like Dave Grohl said, get in a room, get in a garage with your buddies and suck for a while.
For a while.
and keep trying and keep sucking until you don't suck.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's how you do
it.
That's how they did it. And that's how most of the bands that we idolized did it.
Yeah.
You have to go through that period, but there's so little patience now, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and I see that in the kids that come into the store, you know. They're either full on little, you know, like Joe Bonamassa, they're either full on guitar dweebies that are just so into it and so immersed that they got that glazed look and you know they're going to be a lifer.
Yeah.
Or they're just kind of like, yeah, I want to play guitar. And then 2 weeks later, they put the guitar down and because it's hard.
Yeah. It's a lot of work.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's not the easiest thing. If it was, everybody would do it.
Sure.
You know?
Of course.
So, I feel lucky and blessed to be somebody who did it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm when I was a kid, all I wanted to do, once I discovered it, all I wanted to do was play guitar. That's all I wanted to do, much to my mother's chagrin. But I am so glad that I dedicated my life to doing such a thing, because now here I am at this point in my life and I can say, wow, I did it. I became a guitar player.
Right.
And that's all I wanted. I didn't want to be famous. I didn't want to be rich. I didn't want chicks. I didn't want, well, of course I did, but you
that
know
all
I mean?
Would have been nice.
Yeah. It all would have been nice. But that wasn't the motivation. Right. The motivation was, I just wanted to be able to do that.
Right.
Yeah. I wanted to be able to strap that thing around my neck and be able to play and, you know, stand in front of people and go, wow, look what I'm doing. And then go, yeah, you know, and it's, that's still the biggest thrill that there is.
Yeah.
You know, I love making music. I love performing the best, you know? So, you know, it's a lot of fun. So what do y'all think about my new basement? It's pretty cool, huh?
It's
cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's got 450 records in Boston, the floor.
Where did you get the records from?
Because
surely you didn't do this with your collection.
No, I couldn't have done that. I hadn't had that many records in years. There's a place on Woodland Street up here close to my house that's called the Turnip Green. It's a creative reuse center. It's kind of hard to describe, but Abby goes there and gets supplies and things to make costumes and props for her burlesque, and they have all these art supplies in there. They have anything from magic markers to bowling trophies. Mm-hmm. Just all the stuff that people have donated that you can like use for creative purposes. You can make art projects or whatever. And I had seen this picture online of a floor done with the records.
Yeah, I've seen it too.
And it was a kitchen, I think. It was just a small area. And I jokingly said to Abby at one point, we should do this to the basement. And she came home one day and she said, Todd, they've got boxes and boxes and boxes of old vinyl LPs that most of them are shot.
Right.
You know, they're just discarded that somebody brought in and left. So we went up there and we gave them a donation. You give them a donation and then you can take whatever you want. We threw them like $50 or something for their charity. And we walked out with like six boxes of records, like 400, 500 records. And then we just went through them and threw out the ones that were really, really messed up that wouldn't have laid flat or whatever. But then the rest of them, we just, you know, planted them in the floor, you know, stained the floor. A nice plum purple,
of course.
And then, of course, and then put a coat of epoxy down, stuck the records to that, let it sit overnight, and then epoxied over that. And now you got this amazing floor, and cool, you sit here man. And you look and go, oh, look, it's Frank Sinatra. Oh, the Statler Brothers. Oh,
it's Kiss. A little bit of everything.
You know? Yeah, there is.
There's, oh, you didn't mess up a Kiss record.
There's all kinds of. Well, yeah, I did. Hey, man, I got everything
put
in
a
here.
Kiss record in there.
I'm just giving.
Yeah, I had to, man. Come on, I had to put stuff that I love.
Gene Simmons will send you an invoice.
Yeah,
you owe me 25 cents for that.
Yeah, it's kind of scary because now I know some guys. You know,
yeah,
kind of real close to them. So I guess I better watch it. Somebody's watching me.
I see Philip coming up to you. You've been served, Tom.
The boss says I have to give you this.
It's too funny.
But yeah, it's turned out to be a really great space, and you know, did the soundproofing and everything, and I've actually turned my basement into a bit of a recording studio here, so it's kind of neat.
Yeah,
you know, silver lining to the terrible thing that we went through.
Yeah, definitely.
You know,
yeah, just seeing the progress pictures as things were getting built and put back together was just so, I'm just so happy for you, man. I just
thank you.
It was.
But to come out here today and see it for
and
ourselves,
to see it finish, you know, is just awesome.
Yeah. It's a trip. I love it.
Yeah. Especially knowing what it came from. Just,
yeah. It's a little weird coming in, though, isn't it? Because it's, the house is so very much the same.
Yeah, we walked up on the porch, we're like, it looks the same.
They did such a great job of recreating the house. And even though, you know, it was 120, almost 100-year-old house. It was built in 1925. So it was almost 100 years old. And they just did such a great job of. They went to the wall to try to make everything as close to what was as they could. We did some redesign stuff on the interior just to kind of make it our own, but ultimately it still feels like home.
Yeah.
It's a little weird sometimes because everything's new, so it's kind of like walking into a movie set of my house.
Yeah.
You know,
because
the floorboards used to creak. Now they don't creak, you know. And it's just, you know, in the middle of the night when I wake up and get a drink of water or something, and the lights are kind of all out, you know, and like just the light on the microwave's on in the kitchen. I walk into the kitchen. It's just different enough that it kind of spooks me and weirds me out.
Yeah.
It's
like,
oh, wait a minute, because I wasn't awake yet, you know, I'm only half awake, and it's kind of, you know, I lived here for over 20 years before this fire happened, so it's a little weird for me.
Yeah,
it's, you know, there are moments where I'm kind of like, did that really happen? It's kind of surreal, but I'm very thankful. You know, now I have a home that I'll never have to worry about anything again. You know, I told Abby, by the time this house needs a roof, I'll be dead. It'll be your problem.
Well, that's a little morbid, but okay.
Yeah, she's a bit younger than me, so I told her, hey, you get the cabinets and the countertops that you want because you're going to live here longer than me.
Wow. Well, and you know, and she wasn't even in the picture the last time we were over here. So
that was a while ago.
Yeah.
That was a while ago. Now, of course, she was with me when I was at the expo.
Yes,
You know, and she had just moved in with me 2 weeks before the fire happened.
Oh, right.
She moved all her stuff in here, and all her stuff was still in boxes in the dining room. And we decided, let's go on vacation. We went to my sister's house at the beach, and then the house burned, and her stuff was still in boxes. And they were sorting through her crap, sitting in boxes that were burned up in the dining room.
Wow.
So her stuff wasn't even unpacked.
Dang.
And she had just moved in with me. It was incredible. Just bizarre.
It's a good thing she didn't say, well, sorry, Ty, this is a big red flag right here.
Man, you know, and it's a testament to who she is, because she could have.
Yeah,
and a lot of people would have.
She stuck with you through a really rough time.
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
And a lot of people might have just said, you know what, this is too much. I'm going to get out of here.
Yeah.
You call me when this is done.
Yeah.
Because it got ugly for a while, especially with all that commissioned stuff. But she stayed with me. So
that's awesome.
True testament of when somebody really loves you.
Yeah.
Maybe before you tell the Van Halen story, you've added any cool visitors to the store lately? Have you talked to Billy Gibbons lately?
You know what? Billy is the sweetest man. He is so nice. When the thing was going on with my house, he actually gave me money for my house.
Wow.
He probably hated if I was telling you that, but the way he did it was just so classic him. You know, he hangs out with this guy named Tim Montana. He's got a band called Tim Montana and the Shrednecks. And Tim, his band has been opening for ZZ Top on a lot of their tours recently. And he hangs out with him whenever he's in Nashville, and they co-write and stuff. Tim's written a bunch of songs with him and stuff. And Tim's real nice. He's been a Corner Music customer for years. And one day I'm at work, and Tim walks in with this guitar case, and he says, "Hey, Todd, what's up? Hey, Tim, what's going on?" And he says, "Hey, man, this is Billy's guitar. And can you like throw some strings on this? Because he's got to go to a sound check for he was doing the Volunteer Jam with Charlie Daniels."
Oh, nice.
And he said, "He's doing the Vol Jam with Charlie, and he's got to go to the rehearsal, but he broke a string on this, and we got to catch lunch before we can go. Can you throw some strings on this real fast?" And it was that SG that he played on Daryl's house with the pinstripes. And anyway, so he's got this guitar in the case, and I said, "Yeah, man, I'll throw the strings on, no problem." So they go off, and I didn't know Billy was actually with him at the time.
Yeah.
And he, because Billy didn't come in, and he apparently they went across the street to Edley's there and got some barbecue, because Billy, he loves that. Every time he comes in the store, "You eat yet? Let's get some Q." You know, he's all about it. Yeah. But anyway, so he gives me the guitar, and I restring it. The strings are in the case. You know, they got their own, his own strings and everything. So I put the strings on it, and then Tim comes back in, and he's kind of in a rush, and he's got like $50 in his hand, you know? And I'm like, "Dude, you don't owe me anything. I just put strings on it, and you brought the strings." He goes, no, man, "This is from Billy. It's for your house." Oh man. I was just, it just staggered me right then. And then for some reason I found out that Billy was actually sitting in the car. So I was like, I wasn't going to let that go.
Right.
So I ran out to the car to thank him. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting in the car. And when I walked up, he's like, "Hey," and it's like he, you know, you've known him your whole life, you know, and he's just so, so personable and so cool. And I walk up to the window and he rolls down the window. "Hey man," he said, "man, I heard what happened to you. And I'm so sorry that, you know, happened. And I've been meaning to come by here and do that. But I just, you know, I hadn't had a lot of time, obviously, and hadn't been in, but I wanted to make sure that you got that." And I was just floored. I was just, and then he says, "Yeah, I ran into Joe Hardy the other day." Now, Joe Hardy's a sound engineer that did a lot of the ZZ Top records. He actually just passed away about a month ago, unfortunately, but this was a few months ago anyway. And Billy said, "I ran into Joe Hardy yesterday." And I said, "Oh yeah, how's Joe?" He says, "He's fine." He said, "He gave me this thing that's this automatic toothbrush, and it looks like a kind of a mouthpiece, like a horseshoe, and it's got this ball that goes around back and forth." He says, I put it in, and it kind of worked really good. He said, I kind of dug it. He said, "And then I left it in there and pulled one of my veneers off." And he's laughing. And he's like, "I just got back from the dentist." Dentist said, "Don't eat an apple because it's coming off."
Oh, wow.
He said, "So I got to go over here and go to this. I got to do this show tonight, and I'm going to have to stand there and not smile at anybody all night long, and then go to the dentist tomorrow and get my veneer fixed."
Wow.
Billy's about as real as it gets.
Yeah,
you know?
That's
a trope.
He's that's one of the things that I love about him so much, is that he's just as real as he can be.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy that came in the store, this was a little while ago, since I've been on your show. One day I'm at the front counter, and damn, Dave Grohl just walks in. It's like a Wednesday, and he just walks in. He's just like he just walks in like a big old puppy dog. He just walks in. He looks just like he always does. He's wearing a black t-shirt, black jeans,
black.
The black wristbands, everything. He just walks in, and I'm like, "Hey." And he's like, "Hey, man." He just walks in, takes a lap, looks
just
at a couple
himself?
Of guitars. Just by himself.
Oh, wow.
Takes a lap, looks at a couple of guitars. I just walk over to him and just say, "Hey, you know, how's it going?" You know me, I never really like get all up in it. You
right.
know, I try to be, you know, because most of those people, they just want to be treated like real people.
Oh, right.
So I just go up to him and start shooting the shit. "Hey, how's it going?" And he says, "Oh man, I'm just, you know, just looking at some stuff, man." He goes, "That's a really cool Explorer there. You know, I had one just like that." And I was like, "Well, you can take that one home too if you want." But he just laughed and he said, "Yeah, man. All right, cool." And he walked out, And he walked across the street, went over to Edley's, sat down, got some barbecue, and he actually sat out on the deck. And people were like, he was almost causing traffic accidents. Yeah. People were like, oh, shit, it's Dave Grohl. And he's just sitting there eating barbecue.
Wow.
But it was just really, really straight up. The drummer's been in, too. He's pretty cool. Yeah.
Taylor Hawkins.
Yeah, yeah, Taylor's really cool. Every time he comes in, he came in a couple of times, and one day he walks in, and we had this six-string ukulele. Mm-hmm. That was this little tiny thing. It's basically a guitar, but it looks like a ukulele.
Yeah.
And it's right on the front counter there, and he looks at it, and he goes, what is this? And I was like, well, they call it a git-a-lele. And he picks it up, and he strums a few chords, and he goes, this is badass. He's like, this is really cool. He said, oh, man, I love this. You got two of these? And I was like, yeah. He said, I'm buying one for Dave. We're going to get on the bus, man. He was just like, we can write with this thing, man. This is cool as fuck. You know?
Wow.
he just lit up.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a really cool guy. And then the next time he came in, you know, we got that banner in Corner Music mm-hmm. that has all these famous names. He walks in next time and he looks up at the banner and he goes, when are you going to put me on that damn banner? I bought them damn ukuleles.
Gotta get a picture of him holding them.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. When are you gonna put me on that thing? Come on, man.
Wow. That's awesome. Your big breaking scoop. The next Foo Fighters album is gonna be a ukulele.
Yeah, probably so. It'll have this little thing on there, you know. Can you just see those guys sitting on the bus playing Motorhead
them.
Songs on ukulele.
I guarantee they probably do.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
All right, so you want to hear this Van Halen song thing again.
Yeah,
this Van Halen story.
This is grown in legend on our show.
Right, so, man, that's okay. I guess I have to start early on in the beginning. When I was very young, I got to go see Van Halen on the, let's see, I think of the first time I saw him was on the Women and Children First tour. And then I saw the Fair Warning tour with a couple of my buddies. Then on the Diver Down tour, I guess that was 1983, so I would have been a senior in high school. And my buddy Mitch and I, Mitch was this kind of heavy set guy, and I was this little skinny guy, so we were like the Laurel and Hardy of our school. We were best friends, thick as thieves, and did a lot of stuff together. Great guy. But anyway, so Mitch and I decided, you know, if we buy concert tickets to the Van Halen show, we'll be able to get some dates.
Right.
We didn't. So, so anyway, so we had these two extra tickets and we ended up selling them to these two girls that we knew, mm-hmm. a girl named Amy and a girl named Laura. And they were real popular girls. One of them was a cheerleader and Amy was a cheerleader but they weren't like, you know, like ditzy cheerleader types. They were actually smart girls, but yeah. They were real popular and Preppy. All the guys wanted to date them and stuff, but they were like best friends. So Mitch and I were best friends. They were best friends. We sold them the tickets. So we all decided to go to the show together. Well, we're sitting at about 19th row. And that was back in the day in the concerts where, you know, there was metal folding chairs and you stood on your chair. You know, everybody stood on their chair and the security guards didn't tell you to come sit down or anything. Cause now, you know, concerts are like a baseball game. You see kids sitting eating pizza, you know, and the 12-year-old kids sitting there eating a pizza at a Van Halen concert. Not in my day. Yeah. In my day, you saw all kinds of shit. I saw people, my experience in Van Halen shows, I saw people getting beat up. I saw people getting a blowjob. I saw people throwing up. I saw people passed out. I saw all kinds of shit, you know. And Van Halen concerts were not for the faint-hearted
right.
in 1983.
Yeah.
Okay. And so we're sitting in the 19th row, and Mitch and I decided that, okay, we'll sit on the outside two chairs and let the girls sit in between us. Mm-hmm. Just in case it gets a little rowdy, the girls are kind of isolated and we'll take the hit
right.
or whatever. I don't know what my skinny little 110-pound ass thought I was going to do. You know, at that point in time. But at the same time, we were trying to be chivalrous.
Right, right.
Well, anyway, what venue was this at?
This was at the Greensboro Coliseum.
Okay.
And so we're sitting 19th row, and Amy's sitting next to me, Laura's sitting next to her, and then Mitch is sitting on the other side. And, you know, I'd seen the show a couple of times, and so I knew some of the shtick. And Dave comes out. And it's, you know, it's all hot and heavy. It's like the middle of the show or whatever. And it's just like the, you know, the crowd's going crazy and the energy's real high and just, you know, and so are Van Halen, obviously. Yeah. Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Oh yeah.
You know, but anyway, so they're just on fire. They're just killing it. And we're standing on our chairs and Dave comes out in those buttless pants, the buttless chaps. And he turns around and he looks at the crowd and he says, "Bottoms up!" And he spins around and bends over and shows his ass to the crowd. And I was like, because, you know, I had seen it before. Right. And I thought, and I looked over to see what the girl's reaction would be. Now, Amy was, they were both kind of short. Amy was this little brunette and she was. I remember she had her hand on my shoulder and she was standing on her tiptoes trying to see because she was kind of short. So she was craning her neck and looking over and I looked at her right at this moment and I saw her and her eyes focused on Dave's ass and she kind of stopped and her eyes got really big and all of a sudden she started to kind of like twitch and she started to like lock up and she started going and I'm standing there and I'm like, okay, this girl had a spontaneous orgasm. Wow. Right there. She looked at Dave and she just went she's like twitching and shaking and Laura looks over and Laura's going, "Oh my God," she's like covering her mouth, you know, like holy shit, you know, and Mitch is like looking at me and his eyes are huge, it's like saucers, and I'm like, holy crap, and I'm looking at her, she's like, by this time, you know, she's just after a couple of seconds she literally like falls down in the chair and is like laying in the chair going twitching. And I'm looking down at her, and I look at her, and I look at Dave, and I look at her, and I look at Dave, and I say, "That is a good job! I want to do that!" And I've been trying to do it for the rest of my life.
Did you run out and buy assless chaps the next day?
Oh, my God. No, I never did that. I never had to ask for it. Never had to ask for it, but that one moment in my life made me understand the true power of rock and roll. You know, I mean, and after the show, my buddy Mitch, you know, he was really funny, and he was kind of looking over with this grin on her face, and Amy was just sitting there, lights came up, and they're sitting there, and Laura's just kind of sitting there like she's just so embarrassed she just didn't know what to do, and Amy's just like sitting there kind of leaned back in the chair just kind of like, you know, like spent, you know. Just spent, she's just sitting there with this look on her face, and it looked, I hate to get graphic here, but we kind of already have.
Why not?
It looked like somebody had thrown a cup of water in her lap.
Oh wow.
Oh, we have one of those, do we? So my buddy Mitch, in his infinite wisdom, he looks over and he goes, "Yo, Amy, what's that on your pants?" And she's like, sweat. My hands were sweaty. And she's like rubbing her hands on her. My hands were sweaty.
Wow.
So, I mean, there was just this thing. It was scanning. We didn't really speak. We didn't talk much at the end. We all got in the car and nobody was really saying anything. It was Mitch and I were like, "Man, it was a great concert."
Yeah.
You know, the girls weren't saying shit, you know. And I went home and I asked my sister, who's like 6 years older than me. I went home and I asked my sister. She was, I guess I was 18. She was living at home at that time because she was bartending at Daryl's and she was like in between in her life. She had moved back home for a bit. But anyway, so she's 6 years older than me. And I'm like, "Amanda, is that possible?" And she goes, "Well, yeah, I guess it could be."
And I told her, David Lee Roth, anything is possible. Roth,
you know, that man has some power. You know? And I've seen those videos. You know, they always talk about those videos of the Beatles, you know, and you see those girls just fainting and going out, you know, and you know some of them had to be like, But yeah, that's without a doubt, after that night, there was no doubt what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
And here we are today.
Guitar on my back, trying really, really hard, you know. But, yeah, you know. All right. So I can't believe you made me tell that story.
Come on, man. It's like one of the greatest stories ever told.
Ever told.
All right.
One of these days, it's going to get back to them, and they're going to get really. I'm going to suddenly get a call from these young ladies, and they're going to be like, "Stop doing that fucking stuff." Oh, and inevitably, man. Now there's probably somebody went to high school with me and go, "Oh my god!" You know.
Say the names.
But I swear to God, I swear on my mother's grave that happened. Wow. I'm telling you that happened. And you know, I think I told Abby about it. She was like, "Well, maybe she had a seizure." No, she did not have a seizure.
I've never heard of a seizure that.
It was a special kind of seizure.
Yeah. I've seen people have a seizure before. That wasn't a seizure.
No, I've never heard of an orgasm happening. During a seizure.
No, she was having, if it was, she was having a lot of fun during that seizure.
Yeah, epilepsy sounds hot.
Yeah. It was that's so crass. But it's so, I swear, you can call me a liar all you want, but I experienced that.
Well, thank you for sharing that again.
Yeah, rock and roll, man. That's what it's all about. Yeah.
All right. So, we're going to wrap this one. Will you stick around and do a little bit of our KISS podcast, Torpedo Dudes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll do that next. But give out the plugs. Where can people find you? Where can people find about the Big Top show and all that stuff?
Okay, the easiest way to find the Big Top, it's on Facebook. We got a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/ I think it's TZ's. R&R Big Top. But if you just
we'll link
search
it the show
rock,
notes.
Yeah, you can link it. If you just search Toddzilla's Rip Roaring Rock and Roll Big Top, you'll probably find it. And we've got been doing some recording here in the basement, mostly to kind of create like a demo reel so that we can play for booking agents and stuff. But we got a couple of really great songs we put together. One of my favorites is a band called Saga from the early 80s. Yeah. There's a great song called On the Loose.
I heard that today. That was awesome.
We just ripping on that, man. Yeah. So go find that. That's a really good track. And, we're doing some fun stuff.
Awesome. Well, Toddzilla, it's been fun doing
always.
This again.
Yeah. We'll just keep telling these stories over and over.
It never gets old.
Maybe one day I'll have a couple more. I don't know. I think I've exhausted most of the good ones.
And there's always time.
Yeah. Well, we can find something.
All right. Thanks again.
Guys, thanks so much for having me. And all you people out there, thanks for all your support. And keep listening to these guys because they're doing something great.
Well, thank you. Oh, we have to put them on the spot and have them pick the playout song.
All right.
What do you want? What do you want us to play the show out with?
Shit, I don't know.
Pick something.
But of what? Just any song. Any random thing?
Your song? Anybody else? It doesn't matter.
How about the Saga thing?
Yeah.
You gonna do that?
Yeah. Let's just. I'll give you the track.
All right.
Yeah,
cool.
You just play this. So this is Toddzilla's Rip Roaring Rock and Roll Big Top doing a cover of "On the Loose" by Saga.
See you next week.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.